Hi, friends. I'm Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, where I chat with friends each week about how they've moved from just plain old struggling to struggling well. The show is not only about motherhood and kids, though. The fact of the matter is, we all have struggles. So think of it more as a conversation regarding how to be less bad at our jobs. I don't know about you, but I can use all the help I can get. So let's go ahead and get started. Hey, lovely ladies and the occasional gentleman. Welcome back. This is episode 51, and I'm looking very forward to sharing Amy Carroll with you. She's a writer and a speaker for Proverbs 31 Ministries, and her deal is helping women break out of the chokehold that perfection has on some of us and live a life of freedom and joy. Sign me up for that. She has grown kids, so she talks about how to make it through the teen years, and she holds out a lot of hope for us moms who are either about to go into that or are currently in it with our angsty kids. She also talks about very practical ways that she walked through anxiety with a kiddo who struggled with it. Before we get to that, though, I just wanted to quickly remind you to get your Mom Struggling Well red campfire mug. They're fun, they're cute, and I promise they'll change your life. And by that, I mean that your life will be different because you have an extra mug. Really, though, it helps me cover the costs associated with hosting a podcast. Plus, I write you a personal note, which my kids don't even get in their lunchbox. So it's really pretty significant. If you already have your mug, here's where you start buying them for everyone you know. Plus, if you've been doing the hard work of spreading the news about this show, like I've been giving you suggestions kindly each week, then you've been doing some really weird things, and some of them are illegal. So maybe the neighbor who you burned up their yard, maybe they need a mug. Maybe the Chinese restaurant owner who you snuck a bunch of fraudulent fortune cookies into his establishment, maybe he needs a mug. You know what I mean? The fact is, you've been doing some really weird stuff lately, and you need to fix those strained relationships with a Mom Struggling Well mug. Go ahead and go to momstrugglingwell.com/mugs and get yours today. Okay, let's go ahead and jump in to my interview with Amy Carroll. Hi, Amy, and welcome to the show. How are you?
I am doing great. So happy to be with you, Emily.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you. Will you tell us all a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a mom of two boys that are not boys anymore, actually. They're men. 22-year-old that just graduated from college. His name is Anson, and Nolan, my youngest, just finished his freshman year in college. So this was our first year of Empty Nest.
What was it like? Was it what you thought?
Well, here's the real deal. So the first 2 weeks were more painful than I even imagined. Okay. And then after that, it was awesome.
Oh, man.
I miss them. And it's so funny because I have a brand new understanding of my parents and my husband's parents, because we really do wait for the phone to ring. We just get giddy when a text comes from one of them or something. And so all of a sudden we're like, oh, this is the way our parents have felt all those years. Okay. On the other hand, it's like we're dating again, and Barry and I are having a blast.
Oh my gosh. I'm feeling very jealous right now. I'm just going to confess that. My youngest one's four.
Yeah, that stage, that old saying that the days are long and the years are short, so true. And I have become that crazy old lady who says, oh, you're going to miss these days. Like, yeah, right. Come live in my house.
Oh, my gosh. I have a lot of conversations about that crazy old lady.
Yeah, I'm her.
My other friends who are, yeah, you're her. Well, let's embrace it, you know? Okay, so you've got the perspective of having older kids, and I really need to hear that. What's your biggest thing you wish maybe I wouldn't have made such a big deal about?
Pretty much everything, to be quite honest with you. One of my big things that I'm talking about, writing about these days, is just getting free from perfectionism. And when my kids were young, those were probably the worst years of my perfectionism. I mean, it amped up my perfectionism to be a mom to just unreasonable, horrible degrees.
Was it mainly on them or on you or on everybody?
I think, well, if you ask them, you might get a different answer. I think mostly on myself. And, you know, perfectionism is rooted in something good. I mean, it is one of the most important jobs in the world to be a mom. And so I just wanted to do it really, really well. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing to want that. Right. The amount of pressure I put myself under to meet my own expectations, and some of those were just crazy. I mean, when we start basing our expectations on watching our friends and trying to be them, or now, I mean, I'm old, so Facebook was not around doing this, but watching Facebook or Pinterest and stuff.
Pinterest.
Oh, my heavens. I mean, give it up, girls. And so that's my best piece of advice today.
Okay.
Give it up. Yeah. So I was really hard on myself, but particularly I see I passed on my perfectionism to my first child. So I was pretty hard on him too. You know, his perfection was a reflection of my own, right?
Right. I know we get that very confused.
Sick. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So your kids are grown and you said that parenting is just different now.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a coaching.
Yeah, that has been interesting. And I did have tried over the years to watch and sort of interview my friends who have older kids. So I was sort of prepared for this. That now both of them came home at least for a short time for the summer. My youngest has already gone again. It's funny, but
it's sad / the very best thing ever.
I know. Crazy, right? But really, you know, when they're small, you really can control most of their worlds. I mean, you schedule the play dates, you pick out their clothes, you feed them, you discipline them. And when they get to be 18 and they're living out on their own at college or doing what they do, suddenly there's this new dynamic. Of course, there's you let go over the years, but mm-hmm. especially once they've lived on their own and they haven't had you around telling them what to do every move to make, then suddenly you realize there are times that I just need to keep my mouth shut. And, you know, that's hard. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day that's also, she's a terrific mom. I love watching her. And she said she's seeing her 19, 20-year-old son still struggling with the same things. And she's kind of been harping on him this summer. Okay. And God finally, she said, I feel like God is telling me to stop, to be quiet, that my work is done, and that now he needs to do that work.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, that's a hard shift when you've been big mama, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of influence, and now you're just one influence.
Huh, one of many influences, yeah.
Right.
Okay. What did that look like in the teenage years and the like high school and all of that? I don't think I even know my question other than it seems scary to start letting them go if you see that they're kind of, their little characters are bent in a way that isn't quite great sometimes.
Right. Well, absolutely. Well, and let's just get this out there. Your kids will mess up and they will do things that embarrass you, especially if you're, you know, that have that bent towards perfectionism.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, and you will say things that you swore you would never say. You'll hear your mother coming out of your mouth. So what we have to do is hold on to a couple of values. And this was my parents. I always say they're no perfect parents, but mine were pretty close. They did a great job and modeled some things really well for me. And one of them was that we give you trust until you prove that you don't deserve it. And so that was a really great thing with my kids, is that we tried to extend curfews. We tried to give more freedoms a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. And as long as they continue to deserve it, then we would continue to give them more. So really, by the time they left home, it wasn't a set curfew. That's just one example. Curfews are a big deal. We didn't have a set curfew. We just asked them to tell us what time they would be home. So we wouldn't have to worry about them. So it's a letting go a little bit at a time and watching to see if they prove themselves, not watching suspiciously. We really watched, hopefully. We hoped that they would live up to the freedom that we were giving them.
I like the difference between suspicion and hope, because I tend to be a little more suspicious. I don't know why. And so I think they pick up on that and go, well, she kind of thinks I'm going to mess this up anyway.
I think that does happen. So there's a good balance in there somewhere, because kids will try to get away with things. They're little sinners just like us.
Right. So, and I think some people think, oh, that sweet little baby couldn't do anything wrong. And I'm like, come on.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. All we have to do is harken back to our teenage years. Just remind yourself what you like. Your child is just like that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. So slowly letting go.
Absolutely.
You mentioned that your mom made your house a sanctuary and very safe. but efficient. Yes. That was, I'm assuming, another thing she modeled. Tell me about that. Some people think, I don't even know how to do this. Like, how do I even feel safe? How can I make them feel safe if I don't even feel that myself, maybe?
Oh, that's a great, great observation. Well, and you know what? I think we should start there, is it is all rooted in our feeling safe. And that comes with deep relationship with Jesus, right? So we start the day with him, or in the day with him. I'm not a big legalist as far as time of day, but spending time in the arms of our Father and feeling safe there, because he is our safe place, is the start of all of that. But for my mom, there's kind of layers to this. I mean, there's the external things, which was, she ran our household really efficiently. She said she was a good model for that. I think she would even admit that she was, I probably got some of my perfectionism from her in that way. But she does it sort of effortlessly, which is not true for all of us, not even for me. But
what kinds of things were very efficient? Because I've seen pictures of that on Pinterest.
Efficient. Exactly.
So I know what happened.
Exactly. Well, the neat thing about my mom was, just an example of something external, is there might be some dust on the surfaces, but things were put away. So that's kind of one of my things too, is that if things are put away, it doesn't matter if there needs to be some vacuuming done and some dusting done. But there's some order. And so I think there's some peace that comes with that external order. And so if you're one of these people that you're like, I just cannot get my house all clean at one time, I totally get it. In fact, I'm sitting in an office now that is just horrendous. So I get it. I get it. But, you know, if you have your place where you live and your living space kind of picked up, I think that's a great place to start.
Yeah. You know, it's funny with my house, my friends come over and they think, oh my gosh, your house is so clean. And like, sounds like with your mom, it's not like clean. I'm using air quotes. You can't see them, but it's not clean, but it is. I have purchased 27 over the years baskets from like World Market or whatever. And I don't care what basket it's in. It needs to be in a basket. I need to not see it, or you must not want it. And let me assist you by throwing it in the trash. And so that's how it works, girl, though, because visually I'm not cluttered.
Yes, yes. So that's a, and baskets are the best, or those containers that you cannot see through. Those are the best, you know, stuff like that, that makes it easy. And that's some good parenting, that you're teaching your kids to do it themselves too. And So there was that external order. Another thing that we did is we had family meals. So, and of course, as your kids get older and they go to high school, this all just disappears. I just got to be real.
Does it disappear? Does it just change, or just kind of, there's no time?
Well, so I think you have to maintain that we're going to do this at least a couple times a week. But if you've got two or three teenagers, I'm just telling you, they start going all different directions, and you're just really, really blessed if you get those two or three times a week. But if it's, you know, something that's important to you, the family will make it happen.
Right. Do you then start adding other kids to it? How did that work? Is it more of like a no one else but us, this is our time, we're protecting it, or bringing in all the neighbors?
I mean, we did some of both. And so, I mean, I would say that family meals were just the four of us. But then, I mean, one of the things that I've missed the most this year is having my boys friends around, because I enjoyed them so much too. And let me just tell you about the teenage years.
Yeah.
You don't have to dread them. I mean, if you hang in there on the discipline and stuff when they're little, John Roseman, a family psychologist, he says that kids are like credit cards. You pay now or you pay later. Isn't that great?
So yeah.
If you pay now when they're little, then you don't have to pay later when the problems are way bigger. And that's not to say it's perfect, but.
Right. I feel like I'm paying so much right now.
Oh,
so good.
So did I. And so really, my kids' teenage years were my favorite with them.
Really? I love that. Okay.
Yeah.
What did you love about it?
Well, they'll talk to you. So, and they're able to express their thoughts and emotions, and just to see or hear what's going on in their heads and how they're maturing and how they think differently than you. I mean, they're so distinct. I just thought it was so much fun. And then having their friends around was a bonus because they had great friends. And I laughed so hard all the time. So laughing's my favorite thing. So having a bunch of teenage boys around is pretty hysterical.
Helpful. Gives you a lot of material.
Yes.
So tell me, how do you get a boy to talk to you? Was that easy? My boy's four. He talks all the time, but I'm assuming that it changes as they get older.
No, that's a great question. Well, I have one that talks more than the other. So my oldest is more private, and he won't give up his friends for anything. I'm just telling you that. My youngest, but he now, the 22-year-old, he is such a thinker, and to hear how he processes things is so amazing. I think you have to develop it when they're young. And listen, okay, so here's one of my things. And again, when I was bringing up kids, did I have a cell phone? I'm not sure. I tell you, and I'm just going to be the old lady who says it to your young audience.
Yeah.
I cannot stand it to be in a restaurant and watch parents on their phones while their kids sit there and eat in silence. It breaks. I mean, I'm almost crying talking about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you do not show value for your children and talk to your children when they're small, they will not talk to you when they're older. Mm. I'm just telling you the bottom line. Put the phone away and talk to your children. And see, I didn't even have that when I was raising kids. And so it just wasn't an issue.
It makes me really nervous about the future of the kids now that are being ignored.
It does.
What's that going to be like? You know, I won't even go to those restaurants where they now have the video games on the table, like for reals. No,
it drives me crazy.
I won't even go there. No.
Yeah. Yeah. It drives me crazy. So it takes investment. Again, pay now or pay later. It takes investment on the front end. But and my kids will talk to me and my husband about really hard things. In fact, my friends are amazed. Mm. And we've just kind of had a thing at our house. And listen, I have to practice the bland face in the mirror because sometimes my hair is on fire while they're telling me these crazy things. But I have the bland face like, oh, this is no big deal, practiced. And you have to practice in the mirror.
Mm-hmm. Oh, bless you. That is hysterical. Okay. So the bland face, that's probably a way that you stay safe, right? Is just not losing your brains every time they say something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that was, you know, going back to my mom, what made things safe. So the external was the order in our house. The internal was we were just so deeply loved. There wasn't anything that we couldn't tell. There wasn't shame in our house put on us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something we've tried to do with our kids, too. And let me tell you, once you've been through the teenage years, I said to my friend one day, oh, my heavens, this is making me more humble and less judgmental by the day. I mean, all those things that you say, well, I'm never going to, or my kids are never going to. Oh, yes, you are. And all those things that you judged other moms for, you better stop it because it's coming your way. But then to make grace the headliner for your home instead of shame is super important for safety.
How? If someone grew up under shame, not really familiar with grace.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do? Obviously, it goes back to know the Lord and spend time with him and let him, you know, change your heart. But I don't know. I think shame is so, it's easy. It's easier to shame a kid than to say gracious things.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's know the Lord, but then the how do you choose grace is to trust the Lord. I mean, the thing that I've had to tell myself over and over again is God is big enough. I can't change this necessarily, but God is big enough. So just for an example, we caught one of our kids in one of the big sins, and it was devastating. It was devastating. That night, you know how you hear about African women keening at a death?
What is that?
It's this like wailing that they do. And I found myself on the floor of my closet because I was trying to make sure nobody heard me keening. That was the only word I could think of. I was so devastated. And I went back in his room. We were trying to talk through it. His dad held himself together a lot better than I did.
He had a bland face.
Oh, yeah. I finally got.
You had the keening face.
Of course, my eyes were swollen out to the end of my nose. But yeah, I was trying to do the bland face. And I reached over to hug him. And he said, don't hug me. I don't deserve that. And in that moment, this is God speaking out of my mouth because I'm not a fast thinker. It came out before I knew it. And I said, none of us deserve grace. And I leaned over and held my son and he cried and I cried. And
I'm crying.
I cried thinking about it. And it was just this God moment. God's grace flooded that room. And I was freaking out. But in that moment, he knew God was big enough to cover the sin, and I knew God was big enough. And that can start when they're really little.
Yeah, so good to remember. I think sometimes as the parent, we forget that we need grace too, because we're just so busy trying to like guide them in the right direction.
Sure.
So many of what they do wrong, we know that. You don't need to unroll the entire roll of toilet paper every time you go to the bathroom, you know? Yes. So we're doing those, and then we forget like to look at the spinach in our own teeth or whatever, the log in our own eye.
Absolutely. Well, and I have a friend who, this is a small picture, but she grew up in a house that if you spilled your milk, you got a spanking. Mm. And I thought, wow, I'm an adult and I spill my milk, you know? Nobody's gonna spank me. And right. So, you know, trusting God and learning to major on the major and let the minor go. I mean, that's the big thing. And for a perfectionist, that's not easy.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to let go if you need it all to be perfect.
Right.
You mentioned that you had a child who had a lot of anxiety when he was younger.
Yes.
I've had people on the show talking about their own anxiety, but nobody talking about how do you walk a child through it.
That was a super hard time. Our youngest, and this story I tell with his permission, but in second grade, he got to the point where he was throwing up before school every day. He was melting down. I mean, I had to peel him out of the car one day to go into school. And, you know, at the time, the easy thing was to blame the teachers and blame school, and it's stressful. But then it got so bad. Well, that day I had to peel him out. I was like, this is it. And my husband and I are both educators. So that's our background. And so we had just done everything that we knew to do and nothing was working. And so we were like, we have got to have some help. So the school guidance counselor met with us that day. And then we went to a Christian counselor for some help, which was the best move we ever made. And I'm a big believer. But
let me just stop you there.
Yeah.
How did you present, we're going to counseling, to your child without, my concern would be them thinking there's something wrong with me. Do you know what I'm saying? I think presentation and context is really important.
Absolutely.
Like that. So what'd you say?
I was trying to think about that. You know, I think we just said, hey, we're going to go talk to somebody that's going to help us with this. I mean, he already knew there was a problem.
That's true.
You know, so I think sometimes as parents, we think we have to soft pedal things, but it was obvious that
that's a really good point.
Struggling, you know.
Okay.
And it's funny, at that age, they don't think about it anyway. You know, they don't know about the stigma of counseling.
That's such a good point. I know. That's true.
And so we started getting some help that day. But when I went to the counselor, I guess Nolan talked to the counselor a couple times, and then mostly it was the counselor and I working together. And so what she did is she said, hey, one of the first days, hey, so list the things that he's afraid of. And so I started this list, and I'm like, well, there's balloons and there's clowns and there's Santa Claus. I mean, he screams when we drive by the mall when Santa Claus is there. And then there's loud stuff like movies and garage doors and thunderstorms. And oh my heavens, Emily, because we had dealt with them one by one, I hadn't recognized how long and overwhelming the list was, because I listed and listed and listed. And all of a sudden I thought, okay, this isn't just about a teacher at school. This has been going on since he was itty bitty. And there's a root that we need to deal with here. School is just the symptom that brought it to the forefront for us. So it was a really, really hard time, but I want to give, and because I've blogged on this in the past and gotten such an enormous response, I know a lot of your listeners are dealing with children that are having childhood anxiety.
Yeah. I mean, I have a kid who will scream so loud when Chick-fil-A cow comes that It's like we check that the cow is not there at Chick-fil-A before. Sure, we go in.
Sure. And some of that's normal stuff. I mean, clowns are scary, right?
Oh, they scare me. Yeah.
They're awful.
We have thunderstorm, paranoia, hysteria over here. No, I definitely have an anxious child.
Oh, yeah. So you have to say, well, okay, so what is it on the scale, right? For us, it had gone off the scale. It was debilitating. It was shutting down our lives. And so it was something we really had to address. Mostly childhood anxiety, kids grow out of it. That's the really good news.
Okay.
But if it's shutting down your life, first of all, I'd say find a great Christian counselor. And then also we did a lot of homework at home. And one of the things that you can do if your child has these specific fears is to do some desensitization exercises. And I think people could do this even without going to a counselor and just see how it goes. So for example, for thunderstorms, that was a big issue at our house. And it wasn't just like, I'm a little afraid of a thunderstorm. It was total freakouts during thunderstorms. So what we did is we went to the library, he and I, and we got a stack of books about storms. Mm-hmm. And so we read about storms and we talked about storms and we looked at pictures of storms. And then we got a recording of a thunderstorm because it was really the sound for Nolan that was the issue. Mm-hmm. And we listened to it really quietly together. And then we listened to it louder and louder. Now, this took weeks of this. Okay. Until we were listening to it kind of at full volume. And then the next thunderstorm that came along, he and I sat in a chair and I was holding him and we looked out the window and watched the thunderstorm. And then our final phase, and we did that a couple times during thunderstorms. And then the final phase is we sat on the front porch during a thunderstorm together. Wow, yeah. I didn't send him out there by himself, but together, right?
Good luck, son.
I know, right? And so, and by the end of it, he was fine. No more fear of thunderstorms. So that's just a simple, thing that you could do with just about anything, is to step by step, just introduce it, talk about it, remove the mystery and
learn about it. It's good.
Yeah. And just so you know, I mean, one of the days that I sat with the counselor, I started crying and I asked the hard question. And if you have a child that's struggling, you've probably wondered too. So I said to her, I have some mental illness in my family. We've got some schizophrenia. We have some depression. And so is this the tip of the iceberg? Is this just something that I need to prepare myself? Is going to be a lifelong thing for him? And she smiled and she said, no. Childhood anxiety usually disappears over time. And so that was the good news. And Nolan actually has lived that out. So it did take several years before it really became completely manageable. Mm-hmm. And even now, he's probably my kid that's wired a little tighter, mm-hmm. but he knows what to do. And so if you give them skills about how to handle anxiety, and that's something that all of us deal with on some level or another.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's a great skill to take into adulthood. And now he's a freshman in college and he's doing great, and he'll take on the world. So just know, I want to give hope to, because it was such a hard time for us. And I can deal with my own pain worse than I can deal with my children's pain, or better than I deal with my children's pain.
Because you can in some way manage it. And if they're so afraid, they can't listen to reason or logic in the moment. And so I love your idea of kind of entering into it when it's not a thunderstorm, for example.
Right.
Because it's hard to, they can't hear you when they're so afraid.
That's right.
You told me a verse that you use, and it's just an encouragement to you, to encourage moms. Do you remember what it was?
I love it. It's
Do you
Psalm,
have it? Tell me it.
I do. Psalm 18:32. And this is actually from the New King James Version, which is not usually what I read from, but somebody gave it to me in this version. And it just so perfectly equips me as a reforming perfectionist. And it says, it is God who arms me with strength and makes my way perfect. And, I was the young mom who was trying to be strong all by myself, even though I had a relationship with God. I was still trying to do it myself. I was trying to create my own perfection. And what I learned in all that is, until I end my own pursuit of perfection, God can't start his perfecting work in me. Mm. And so this just reminds me that it's God that ultimately gives me strength and also makes my way perfect, that I don't have to do that work myself. And I wish I could go back and tell my young mom self to chill out a little bit, that, you know, God really is in control. You don't have to control every situation yourself.
Yeah. And it goes so much better if we let go and let him control it.
Oh,
but it's really scary.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, what would you say to a mom who's having a really rough time with maybe an anxious child or just children in general? How would you encourage her?
Well, the thing that I think about in my early years is my self-talk was brutal. I mean, just brutal. The things I would say to myself would be things that I would never say to anybody else, because I'm kind of a kind soul at heart to other people. Mm-hmm. But I was just awful to myself. And so my advice is to be kind to yourself. You're not going to do it perfectly, and it's okay. And so instead of being so hard on yourself in your head, be kind to yourself. It was interesting. I was talking to my friend Sherry the other day, and she said that she and her daughter were going through old photo albums. And her daughter kept saying, oh, I hate that picture of me. My teeth are buck teeth, and I hate that picture of me. Look how broken out I was, and I hate that picture of me. And for one reason or another, she kind of hated all of them. And finally, Sherry said, stop talking about my baby that way.
That's so good.
And she said, and as I said it, I thought, how often must God think about me? Like, stop talking about my creation that way. Mm. And so just think about, as you process your own thoughts, is this kind? Is it helpful? Is this what Jesus would say to me in this circumstance? And if it's not, then stop it.
It's true. Yeah.
And really change those thoughts and think about how Jesus would talk to you in those circumstances. Listen, this is not an excuse not to change. We're all works in progress.
Right.
But we should be kind to ourselves.
Yeah. And when he talks to us or you know, impresses things on our spirit, it isn't in a hateful way. But right. We still want to change. So you're right. There's still room for improvement, but we don't have to beat ourselves up along the way.
Exactly.
So I have one more question for you.
Yes.
What is something that you cannot stop talking about right now?
Well, I just got back from my third trip to India.
Oh my goodness.
And God has put this unexpected passion in my heart for India. And this year, Proverbs 31 is partnering with Mission India.
Okay.
Lisa Turkhurst is using proceeds from her new book that's coming out called Uninvited.
Okay.
And we are sponsoring some literacy classes in India. And I cannot stop talking about it because it is the most amazing ministry I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
Tell me everything.
Oh, so our team went, and Susie Eller, Lynn Cowell, and Hope Turkhurst, who is now Hope Turkhurst-Hauser, went on this trip together, and we got to see the literacy classes that Mission India is doing, and it's so amazing because they do teach people to read and write. The majority of them are women, and these are women who, because of their poverty and because of illiteracy, have been so stuck in their lives. The conditions they live in are unimaginable. They're even stuck physically. We heard women talk about they didn't know how to read a bus schedule or train schedule, so they were stuck in whatever little community they were in because they couldn't even travel in
never
the area.
Never thought about that. Yeah.
I know. It was amazing. And as American women, we just take this so for granted that we know how to read. And so they teach them to read and write, but then they also teach them how to keep their homes clean, how to clean up their children, how to have good nutrition. And it is absolutely top to bottom life transforming. But more than anything, they also, from the very first day, their scripture that's introduced is wise sayings.
So good.
It's great on the first day of the curriculum. And so they get God's hope introduced into their lives. And these are women that are unimaginably hopeless. In fact, lots of them are part of the caste system is still alive and well in India. It's against the law, and yet it survives and thrives, actually.
Yeah. Well, I've heard of the caste system. I did not know it was against the law. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. It's not actually legal as far as hiring and firing, that kind of thing. But there are four main castes, and then there is a group of people that's outside of the caste system. They are called the untouchables. And basically, they're outside of the caste system because they're considered subhuman.
My goodness.
I know. It's, you know, we live in a country where it's part of our DNA to say all men are created equal.
Yeah.
This is not true in India. And So they're called untouchables, and literally you can't touch them because you might be contaminated. A lot of them are women. And so I say in India, if you're poor, that's strike one. Mm-hmm. And if you're an untouchable, that's strike two. And if you're a woman, it's strike three and you're pretty much out. Mm. These literacy classes are filled with women who are finding new hope, new joy in life. And it's just incredible. Mm.
And that they have value, I'm sure. Yes. They're pouring, you know, resources and time and love into them. And they think, oh my goodness, I matter.
Absolutely. So the way Susie Eller said it, we got to see it in all the classes, is we visited the class in month 8, and they're 12-month classes. Okay. And so they were almost done. And Susie said they've awakened the dreamers. I mean, these are women who never had time to dream or allowed themselves to dream or had hope to dream. And suddenly we heard them talking about starting their own little business to help their family, or how they could take care of their children better. Or one of the things that was so incredible is they start these, they call them hope cells. So from about the second or third week, they're teaching these women to pray and ask God for what they need. Hmm. And woman after woman said, there's peace in my home with my husband. There's never been peace before. We always used to fight. And that was something we heard over and over again, how God was bringing his peace into their home. So Mission India is doing great work. And Proverbs 31, we're so excited to be partnered with them.
That's wonderful. How can someone get involved?
Well, so Lisa's book is coming out in August. And so buying Uninvited will help support the work that we're doing with Mission India. Okay. And then if you go to my blog, amycarroll.org, I'll be talking a lot more about ways to get involved with Mission India and support that.
That's so exciting. I really love that. So Lisa Turkhurst is sick.
Yeah.
She didn't even call me. She didn't even tell me at all.
Listen, even being on the team, you know, they were very careful about the details that they told us. And of course, we were praying for her the whole time. But just I think yesterday or day before on Facebook, she put a Facebook post. And if you don't follow Lisa on Facebook, you should, because it's always encouraging. And the doctor told her basically that she was near death. I started crying reading her Facebook post. I hadn't realized quite how serious it was. Mm. And I'm so grateful that God preserved her life. You know, for those of us on the team with her, I just would tell everybody else, she's exactly what she seems to be. Mm. Everything that everybody loves about Lisa Turkhurst is all true. She's exactly the same in the office and in her home as she is on the stage and in her books. So we're all thankful that God rescued her and saved her life. Thanks for asking about her.
Yeah, I was really amazed. And then I was, like, a text, Lisa. You could have at least texted me.
I know. Let us know, right?
I do not know you at all, but I would have appreciated.
But don't we all feel like we know Lisa because of how real she is in her book?
Oh my gosh. Her Made to Crave book, I am lighter, literally, because she helped me lose weight just realizing the spiritual connection between it. So I'm a big fan.
Well, just wait for Uninvited, because Susie Eller read it on the trip and she says it's her best book yet. So I can't wait.
Oh my goodness. I can say no better now because of Lisa. I've lost weight because of Lisa. I can't wait.
Amazing.
So good. Awesome. Well, I will send everybody to your website. And, you know, I want to ask, like, what is your website is predominantly about what?
Well, I'm writing a lot now about Breaking Up with Perfect. That's the name of my book. And it's so funny because I started writing the book thinking I had something to share. I finished writing the book realizing how much I'm still in process. And I laughingly say now the title is Breaking Up with Perfect, not Broken Up with Perfect, because I'm just still so in process. They say 9/10 of solving your problem is awareness. And I'm realizing, oh, it was just really awareness at the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah. So I write a lot about that. And just also one of the things that God's put on my heart over the years is just a pursuit of joy. So I talk about breaking up with perfect, embracing joy, having deeper relationships with God and with other people.
Yeah. I think people need to know about that. It's been so nice to talk to you, Amy. I really appreciate getting to know more about your story.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. And it's funny when you sent me the email and I told Sherry, my podcast buddy, I said, Emily says people approach her. We haven't gotten there yet.
Well, some very interesting it gets interesting. I'll leave it at that.
I'll bet.
That's funny. Okay, so tell us about your podcast.
Oh, our new podcast is called Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules, and it's for reforming perfectionists and people pleasers. And then Sherry talks a lot about highly sensitive people. So we are interviewing some amazing people. I just pinch myself that I get to talk to the coolest people. And so we're learning and growing just from those conversations. And then Sherry and I talk with each other in process too. So we'd love for anybody to come by and visit.
Yay. Well, thank you again. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, Emily. Hey, let me know if I can ever do anything for you in the future. I'd love it.
All right. Sounds good. You got some extra time. You could raise my kids for a little bit.
I would love to have them for a weekend. I miss having kids around.
That's funny. All right. I'll keep them.
Okay.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Emily. Bye.
All right, friends. Such good stuff from Amy. Lots of ways we could go with this one. The most important thing is that we apply at least one thing that we learned from this chat. So what will your strategy be to struggle well this week? Maybe you are also a recovering perfectionist like Amy and you need to get Amy's book, Breaking Up with Perfect. I know I do, because when I see the cover and someone has pulled one petal off of a daisy, it really stresses me out. So apparently I have problems with perfection. Maybe you have an anxious kiddo and you could use some of Amy's practical steps to enter into their struggle with them and show them a new way. Maybe you need to practice the bland face in your bathroom mirror this week. I for sure need this one. Or I just need to start wearing my son's Spider-Man mask around the house. Something needs to happen because my face is entirely too expressive. Perhaps, like Amy mentioned, you need to get a handle on your negative self-talk. Sometimes if I say out loud what I'm thinking to myself in my head, if I say it to my husband or to my friends, it becomes apparent that it's really jacked up, the things I'm telling myself. So do what you need to do to cut it out this week. As always, show notes will be over at momstrugglingwell.com, and I'd love it for you to come say hi on either Instagram or Facebook at momstrugglingwell. And check in, especially on Wednesday night, for Struggle Well Wednesdays, where we've started sharing about our day and how we struggled well despite multiple opportunities for us to freak out. The conversation going on over there on Wednesday night is super fun, and it's one of my favorite nights of the week because of it. So come check it out. Y'all are awesome. Have a great week of struggling well.